We're doing the book of Shmuel. We had learned how. Come on, let's see, where are we? We're pre-First Temple, right? Let's re-review where we're holding.
Pre-First Temple,
right? Joshua led us into the land of Israel. We have the period of judges. Shmuel is the final judge. They ask him to appoint a king. He appoints our first king, Saul. King Saul errs in two things. He goes to war without waiting for Shmuel on the seventh day when the Philistines seem to be attacking. He goes to war without waiting for Shmuel to bring the sacrifice. And then he does not kill out Amalek the way he should. And so Shmuel tells him, God's taken the kingdom from you and given it to your friend who's your better. And that is a reference to David. David is portrayed as being very young, but we have on tradition that he was almost 30. He was in his late 20s. He's still single. And Shmuel goes on to anoint David. Then we have the great story of David and Goliath. David has been coming in and serving Saul, playing music before him to calm him down. And then after David is victorious against Goliath, against Goliath, so the girl starts singing how David kills tens of thousands as opposed to Saul, who only kills thousands. And Saul starts feeling threatened by David. He attempts to kill him three times unsuccessfully. And then we learned last week how Saul sends soldiers to his home. David is married to Saul's daughter, Michal. We learned that whole story. And then Michal saves David, lets him out the window, puts a figurine in his place in bed, and then David runs to Shmuel. They spend the night studying about where to erect the temple, the Beit HaMikdash. Shaul sends his men to take David, and time and again the men get prophetic vision and actually do not summon David, until finally Shaul himself goes and gets a prophetic vision. And then we're up to where David comes back to Yonatan and says, "Tell me, what have I done wrong? Why does your father want me dead?" And Yonatan says, "No, it can't be. He didn't tell me." And David says, "No, it must be because your father knows we're good friends, and that's why I didn't tell you. But I'm telling you, I was a footstep away from death." And then Yonatan says, "Okay, what should we do? Tell me whatever you want, I'll do." And David says, "Fine. Tomorrow and the next day are going to be celebrations of Rosh Chodesh." You see, they had a very accurate calculation of the moon. And this began, the tradition began with, who was the first to have the Sodaibu, the secret understanding of the exact revolution of the moon? What's the cycle called? It's not a revolution. Revolution is this turn. The cycle of the moon. What's it called?
Revolution.
No. Revolution is the rotation on its axis. When it goes full circle around the... That's rotation. And revolution is... Okay, so they had an exact tradition on the revolution, going back to whom? Who said Adam? Right, so Adam was told this, Adam HaRishon, and then it got lost, and it was retold to Moshe, and then that tradition remained within the Davidic dynasty, going down to the princes. So David has a very accurate understanding of when the new moon is going to appear. He knows that tomorrow and the next day are going to be Rosh Chodesh, that this month is going to have a double Rosh Chodesh. Why do we have that, by the way? Because the lunar month is 29 and a half days. You got to have whole days of Rosh Chodesh. So sometimes you have 29 days in the month and day 30 is Rosh Chodesh. Sometimes you have 30 days in the month and 31 is Rosh Chodesh. When we have 30 days in the month, day number 30 is also called Rosh Chodesh. So at any rate, you see that even though David's on the run, his head is always in Torah. He comes to Shmuel, he can prophesize, he could learn about where to build the temple. He's on the run and he meets Yonatan. We're going to see he was starving to death, literally. And he can tell Yonatan, "Well, according to my calculations, tomorrow and the next day are going to be Rosh Chodesh." And he's right. There's a big halachic discussion that stems from this sentence. There was a big machloket back before the Rambam and during the Rambam's time. Were the courts really focused on the moon? Or did the courts have their secret calculations and notebooks? And they used the moon because we have a mitzvah to go by the moon. But really, even if they didn't see a new moon, they worked the system based on their understanding, their mathematical understanding of the lunar cycle. So that's a big machlokas. And one of the sources is here. Because you see that David knew what was going to happen, that it would be a two-day Rosh Chodesh. He knew full well how the cycle would work. So David tells him, "Look, every time your father has a Rosh Chodesh party, right? Here's a good source for this idea. Rosh Chodesh, I learned this from one of my rabbeim. He would order pizza on Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh, it says in Shulchan Aruch, for us Ashkenazim at least, you're supposed to eat a little bit something special in honor of Rosh Chodesh. So, right, we know, you guys know the Gemara? Every Rosh Hashanah, it's decided how much money you're going to make, except for the money you spend on Shabbos, Yom Tov, your children's education. And according to some versions, Rosh Chodesh is included in that. That on these things, if you spend more, then God will give you more. Meaning, in the beginning of the year, it's decided how much money you're going to make. I don't remember that it says that, no. In the beginning of the year, it's decided how much money you're going to make. Except for certain expenses. Certain expenses, you spend more, they'll give you more. What are those expenses? Shabbos, Yom Tov, and your children's education. And some also say Rosh Chodesh is included in that. So in Halacha we say a person should have a special meal in honor of Rosh Chodesh. So what do you do for kids? You give them chocolate spread in their sandwiches, right? For them, that's special.
Well,
to hear most chocolate spread is part of that here in Israel. Okay, back to, so David says, look, your father has a special meal in honor of Rosh Chodesh, and all the officers and generals come to eat by him, and your father's going to notice I'm missing the 2 days Rosh Chodesh, and he's going to ask you, hey, Yonatan, Jonathan, where's David? And you'll tell him that my family, traditionally, on this Rosh Chodesh, has a family get-together, and I asked you permission to go, and you gave me permission. If your father says, great, so you know everything's okay. And if your father gets really upset, so you'll know the reason he's getting upset is because really he wants me dead. And do me a favor, we made a pact, you and I. If I deserve to be killed, kill me. What did I do wrong? What do you have to let me come to your father and have this whole story go on? And Yonatan says, God forbid, if I know my father wants you dead, of course I'll tell you. So David tells Yonatan, how will you get word to me? Meaning, I know your father is well aware of our relationship. David already knows the news is going to be bad. And David is concerned because he says, look, if the king didn't tell his son, who's such a brave warrior, as we saw earlier, who's his really top confidant, and he doesn't tell him, then he obviously is aware of our special relationship, which could also mean that he has his men following Yonatan. So he says to Yonatan, how will you let me know without people seeing? And Yonatan says, come, we have a special field where my father and I go hunting. We're going to go to that field. Not hunting. Actually, they would practice their marksmanship. And Yonatan tells David, on the third day, if I see everything's good, I'll send you word over here to the field. But if I hear that everything's bad, so then I'm going to come back here, and believe me, I'm going to keep my end of the deal, but you have to promise me, I know you're going to be king. And don't annihilate my family. Technically, you're going to assume my family is a threat to you, because you'll be king, and my family will feel like they should be the rightful heirs to the throne. Promise me you won't do it. And they make a pact. And Yonatan tells him, I'm going to come out here, and I'm going to stand here and shoot 3 arrows. And I'm going to shoot aiming at a target. I'm going to send out the lad to bring back the arrows. And if I tell the child as he's gathering the arrows are further away. Go further to collect the arrows. You'll be in hiding, you'll hear that. That'll be a sign to you that you better go further away. Things are bad. If I tell him, no, the arrows are closer, come back. So then that's a sign for you to come out of hiding. So David goes hiding, and he has no food. And Yonatan makes a mistake. He doesn't bring any food. And the first day of Rosh Chodesh, the king sits in his place, and David's place is missing, and they shift, everyone shifts to fill the missing place, and Shaul doesn't say a word. He says, you know, maybe David wasn't pure, so they always ate their food in purity, maybe that's why he's not here. But the second day, so Shaul asks Yonatan, why didn't the son of Jesse come? Why didn't the son of Yishai come yesterday or today? Why didn't he come to the meal? Now that's a funny question to ask. You just sent your men to his house to have him dead, and he escaped. A day earlier, you tried killing him in your house, and he escaped. And now you're asking, hey, why didn't he show up? Right? Funny question. So if we remember that Shaul is playing it with Yonatan as though nothing happened. He hasn't told Yonatan anything's happened. So now he's turning to Yonatan. Yonatan could just say, I don't know. What do I know? But instead, Yonatan's going to give a different answer. So suddenly, Yonatan is calling the bluff. And Shaul is back on the defensive. But the way the conversation plays itself out, to us it seems ludicrous. But if you remember the game that Shaul is playing here, so then it makes sense. So then Yonatan answers seemingly innocently. He says, oh, David came and asked me for permission. Oh, really? Remember, Shaul tried to kill him in his house. Shaul tried to kill him in David's house. Shaul himself went to kill him or figure out what's going on by Shmuel. And suddenly he gets here from his own son sitting next to him. Oh, David just came by and asked me, right? Wait a second, I was just trying to kill him. How'd he come and talk to you, right? That's not. He doesn't say that. Yonatan says, oh, David asks me. He continues playing it like everything's normal, everything's great. David came and asked me for permission to go to his family, to be in Beit Lechem, to leave his post. And he told me his big brother actually sent him an order telling him, you better show, the whole family's having a festive meal. And so he came to me and said, is it okay if I run away to have some family time? Remember, David, his wife is Michal, Shaul's daughter, but still has a big family. So that's why he's not here by the king's table. And Shaul gets so upset, he gets up from the table. And he says, you know, your mother was rebellious when the girls went dancing in the vineyards, so that we, the tribe of Benjamin, would find wives. Those of you who are here will remember that story. So Shaul was bashful. He was a tall, brave warrior, one of 600 men that came away alive when there was civil war and all of the tribe of Benjamin was killed. So Shaul was exceptional. He and his father, they made it out alive. And when they had this dance, festive dance, where the guys were supposed to come out and court a girl and ask her to marry them, Shaul stayed on the sidelines. So the woman who was to be his wife ran out and grabbed him and said, hey, she started up with him. And Shaul, being so modest, felt that that brazenness was now playing itself out in his own son. And he says, you know, you're as rebellious as your mother. You got to learn to shape up. Don't you know? And I know that you are voting for the son of Yishai. It's a shame to you. It's a shame to your mother. All the days that the son of Yishai is alive, you and your kingdom will not be established. Summon him here because he deserves to be killed. And Yonatan answers his father. He says, why should he be killed? What did he do? At which point Shaul draws a spear against Yonatan to hit him. And at that point, Yonatan realizes David was right. This has all been a game. Yonatan leaves the table upset. He doesn't eat on that day of Rosh Chodesh because he's upset. He's upset about his brother-in-law, David. Remember, David married his sister. His best friend, David. And his father shamed him publicly. His father gave him over the head in front of all the nobles and everyone. The next morning, Yonatan goes out to the field. He takes along a young kid. He's watching to see if he's being followed. And he starts shooting his arrows. And he tells the lad, run, collect the arrows that I'm shooting. And the lad runs and he shoots one arrow and he shoots another arrow. And the lad reaches the point where he shot the arrow. And Yonatan says, no, it's not there, keep going. He's sending the message to David. And he tells the lad, quick, collect the arrows and keep going. And the lad comes, collects the arrows, comes back to Yonatan. Now, he doesn't know that he's been a part of this whole game. And Yonatan gives him his bow and his arrows, and he tells him, go bring it back to the city. David has been watching all along, and he sees that no one's following Yonatan. Yonatan is all alone. And when he sees that, he comes out from his hiding place. He bows three times. They hug, they kiss, and they stand there weeping. David weeps even more. At the end of the day, it's his life that's now on the line. Him, and he realizes his whole family. And we will see that he will lose his whole family. As a part of this whole story, David will remain alone. We'll see that shortly. And Yonatan wishes David, go in peace. Remember our pact. I will be faithful to you. You will be faithful to me. And our children will be faithful to one another. And as much as Yonatan asks that David remembers the pact, David will turn back on this pact. And as a price for that, David will lose the kingdom. We will see how later on in David's life during the time of the rebellion of Avshalom, when David's own son rebels against him, David suspects Yonatan's son was in cahoots with Avshalom, and so David will punish Yonatan's son and take away half his wealth. And when he does that, we have on tradition that a heavenly voice said, you turned on your pact and you took away half his wealth. I'm going to divide your kingdom. And that's why two generations later, the Davidic dynasty loses most of the people of Israel. So here this pact seems so innocent at this point in Jewish history. We will see that this will still come back to haunt David. Yonatan comes back to the city and he made a fatal error, excuse the pun. He forgot to bring food. David is now 3 days on the run without food. And he's about to go out of his mind of hunger. He's looking around, there's nothing there to be had. He comes to the city of the Aron, the city of Nov. And he's coming in a manner that's really weird. He doesn't have his men with him. He doesn't have his armor with him. He's coming not the way you expect the chief general, like David, to show up. Imagine you're the high priest, and the Ramatkal shows up, the chief of staff shows up. He's without all his, not his warfare suit, not his citizen suits, not his armor, not his men. He walks in looking like a vagabond, you say?
Vagabond.
The V.
Right, yeah. Hey! Yeah. If I don't use my vocabulary, it might dissipate. That's another word. Coming back to our Navi, Achimelech is all worried. And he runs to David. Achimelech is the high priest. And he says, what are you doing here alone? Why don't I see anyone with you? And David says, ooh, I'm here on a secret mission. No one's allowed to know. But the king sent me on a secret mission. And I hid my troops somewhere else. Now, do me a favor. I left here. I was in such a run. I didn't have a chance to take any food with me. What food do you have here? So Achimelech says, the only food I have is the showbread, the holy bread in the Mishkan. Are you and your lads pure? And David tells him, when we left for camp 3 days ago, everyone was pure and no one was with their wives. Everyone's clean and pure. I checked it. Don't worry about it. And anyways, right now it's okay. And anyways, it's pikuach nefesh. I'm telling you, we're on our way to an important mission. I need the bread. So the king gives him the only bread the Kohen gives him the only bread he has, the showbread. Now, he was right. It was pikuach nefesh. He was about to die. David felt himself on the verge of insanity from hunger. What the Talmud calls, what's the term in Talmud? Bulmus. Bulmus is a term in Talmud where a person will suddenly feel like hunger pangs striking him to the point where he feels he can lose his sanity. So David tells Achimelech, you know what? I didn't have a chance to take my armor. Do you have any weapons here? And the priest says, this is a city of priests. The only thing I have here is the sword that you brought here when you killed Goliath. You remember that sword? So you brought it here so that when people would come, they'd have an inspiration. They'd see the great long sword of Goliath. It's an exceptional, an exceptional item. So it encourages people to pray. So we leave it here. So David says it's the best sword I've ever seen. Give it to me. So it's his, it's entitled. And David says, I want to ask God a few questions. Now, a general in the army is permitted to ask questions through the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol would stand wearing his royal, his holy clothing in the holy, facing the Holy of Holies. The king would stand behind him, ask a question, and then the Kohen would feel the presence of Hashem, look down at the breastplate, see different letters shining, and answer the person. So David asks a few questions of Hashem and leaves. David looks over his shoulder and sees the head of the high court. Remember his name? Who's David's nemesis?
Doeg.
Doeg HaAdomi. Big Talmud Chacham had come there to do Hitabodidut. Here you have the first source for Hitabodidut. He's come to the city of Nov to be focused on being a God-fearing person, to develop his connection to God. And he witnesses this whole discussion between David and Achimelech, and the food that's being given to David, and David asks God, and Achimelech asks on his behalf, and David runs. And David actually runs to Philistine territory. He's scared of staying in Jewish territory. And when he gets there, so Achish, his generals, Achish is the king of the Philistines, his generals tell him, you know, this is the David that they sing about, that he's been killing our troops. And David hears it. So David's not sure what to do. So they put him in jail. And David's not sure what to do. We'll pick up here in a second. No, I guess we'll continue here. So earlier, before this story, David had seen a person who was insane, scratching walls and saliva dripping down his mouth. And when David saw it, he prayed and he said, God, you created a world. Why did you have to create insanity? Why are there people here who are crazy? And God says to David, you'll still see that insanity is a tool which even you will need to use. Even you in your lifetime will need to use it. And so when David is in prison, he hears them talking and saying, that's the David who's been killing our troops. So according to one Midrash, it was Goliath's own brothers who were there saying, hey, he killed our brother. So David looks to the wall, starts scratching the walls, starts having saliva go down his beard, and he's standing there behaving like he's insane. And Achish has been hearing this from his servant, so he goes down to the prison to visit David. The only thing is that Achish had a wife that went crazy and a daughter that went crazy. And anywhere he tried going in the palace, they'd come running after him, and he didn't know how to get rid of them. And he didn't have a day and he didn't have a night. So if there was one thing Achish was allergic to, it was people who were insane. Because they were driving his life crazy. So he comes to the prison and he talks to his servants and he says, you guys must be mistaken. This guy's crazy. Do you feel like there's a shortage of crazy people here? There's no shortage. I'm not letting this guy stick around. Get him out. So they open the jail and they tell David to leave. And David runs into the jail and grabs onto the bars and says, I'm not leaving. Forget it. No, this is my house. How dare you? So he's playing it mad, right? To the finish. And they have to literally take him out and he keeps on running back. And this way he actually convinces them that he's insane, that this isn't the David they thought it was. And that's how he gets out in peace. And that's what we say every Shabbos. We say that psalm that David composed about this time. It says, Beshanoto estamo difnei Avimelech vaygareshehu vayelach. Right? The David. Beshanoto estamo difnei Avimelech. It's one of the psalms we say Shabbos morning. The Philistine kings were always called Avimelech. It's like the Pharaoh. So Achish also had the term Avimelech. He also had that title. So that's why in that psalm, David speaks about Avimelech. But really it's this Achish. Just a second. Yes. You wanted something?
No.
Yes.
Did he get to keep Goliath's sword?
Yes. Strange that they left him with the sword, right? So, David runs to a cave called Me'arat Adulam. According to one Medrash, that is the cave where Lot and his daughters were. So he runs to this cave called Me'arat Adulam, and all his relatives come out to him. His father and brothers realize they're in trouble, or there's a threat, and no one can know what Shaul is going to do next. And David starts having a reputation that if you got trouble in life, you could join David's clan. And when people were in debt and they couldn't pay off their debts, when people were embittered, they had a squabble with their wife and they couldn't settle things. Any guy who had difficulty in their life, people who were really down and out, joined this gang. So David has 400 men with him. Now these aren't the finest of men, right? These are the down and outs of society. But these are like, I don't want to say the motorcycle gangs, but maybe it's like that. I don't know enough about motorcycle gangs, but that's the impression you get, right? I have to be careful what I say because we've had people here from motorcycle gangs. So I'm like, there are some very good, normal people in motorcycle gangs.
You didn't deny what Lucas said.
Like I told you last time, Vinny. So, David runs to the Moabite king. Remember, they are related. He is a descendant of Ruth the Moabite. And he tells the Moabite king, do me a favor. Take care of my father and my mother, my relatives, until I know what's going to be with me in life. And then David leaves them there and goes to a place called Mitsudam. And then the prophet God tells him, you can't stay over here. You have to go to your relatives, be in Judean territory. And David leaves the area called Mitsudah to Judea, to the land of Judea. The second he distances himself from the Moabite king, the king has his whole family executed. The Moabite king will kill everyone in David's family. In his palace, there is the son of the Ammonite king, who will ultimately become the Ammonite king, Nahash. And he will rescue one of David's siblings. The one sibling who makes it out alive is rescued by Nahash, the king of Ammon. That's why later on in the book of Shmuel, when we learn that Nahash passes away, and David sends a special mission of elders to comfort his son over the loss of his father, he says, I owe him one. I owe his father one. What he owed him was here. When all of David's family is killed, so then Nahash is the one that actually saves the one relative. So David is now in Judean territory. I didn't see anyone address this point, but it really strikes me that the prophet came and told David, leave. And when David, in fact, listened to the prophet, he lost his whole family. You have to wonder, you know, the prophet told him correct advice because God told him to do it. Obviously, the prophet knew that if he'd stick around there, then he'd be a dead man too. Then Saul would kill him and his family would be next. That's still not easy to swallow. So, David runs. He comes to a place called Yal Charet, which we might discuss later on. Saul hears that David has been spotted. There's been a sighting of David in Judean territory. And Saul was sitting in the hilltop under a tree called the Eshel in the Ramah, in the elevated places. I want us to finish the story and then come back to this pasuk. So the pasuk describes again, Saul is sitting in the hilltop under an eshel in the elevated places. He's holding his spear. All his servants are around him when he gets word that there's been a sighting of David. And Shaul tells the servants who were his relatives from the tribe of Benjamin. And he says, looky here. David has loyalty among the tribe of Judea. You guys are my relatives from the tribe of Benjamin. But I guess that all of you are waiting for me to lose, and David will appoint you as generals and give you all kinds of gifts, fields and vineyards and different appointments, because obviously you're all a part of the pact against me, because none of you thought you should tell me when my son made a pact with the son of Yishai. Notice how he's never called David. Shaul always derides and speaks of him as the son of Yishai. None of you care about me. None of you bother letting me know that my own son turned my servant against me and sets him up an ambush for me just like now. Look, he already has a set of troops. So now I'm threatened by my enemy. He's not calling him his son-in-law. He's ignoring all the good that David did as a general of Israel. And he's applying pressure. Now, when a king starts applying pressure like that, there's an unspoken threat that Shaul is really saying. He's saying, you're a part of this rebellion. What's the next sentence? You should all be killed. So he's applying real pressure on these people. And you will find in life, there are times when someone puts you under real pressure. It can be a serious mess up at work, and your employer walks in and says, who did it? And you feel you shouldn't say, it's Lashon Hara. You're going to cause someone else to lose their job. But the flip side is, if you don't say, you might be held accountable, and you might lose your job. Your wife might be expecting. It could be it's a season where no one's hiring. It could be you really don't think you stand a chance of finding another job. It's 2008. The market's just crashed. No one's hiring. And suddenly you're called in and they ask you who did it. And you happen to have clarified that this is prohibited. A day earlier you called your rabbi and said, if they put me on that spot, what should I say? And he tells you, well, you can't cause someone else to lose their job. There's no real difference who did it. It's a personal vendetta. They're not entitled. No, you're not entitled to say. Whatever the scenario might be, the halacha ends up telling you you can't do it. And suddenly you're there, crunch time. So you got to be prepared. In life, this is what separates the boys from men. These are the moments where you have to define, what do I really believe in? It's not easy. And I gave you an easy example. There are harder examples in life. There are examples that are more difficult. Even though that sounds pretty serious, believe me, life throws at you more serious examples. So, the servants are standing there under pressure. Shaul has clearly indicated an unspoken threat. And the one who breaks under this pressure is Doeg. So Doeg says, I saw the son of Yishai coming to Nov, to Achimelech. He doesn't call him the high priest, Achimelech. And I saw Achimelech servicing him, asking his questions on his behalf before God. And I saw Achimelech giving him food. And Achimelech then gave him the sword of Goliath. He caved in. What usually happens when a person caves in is what's about to happen to Doeg. A person thinks he will take a step forward. Shaul summons Achimelech. And not only Achimelech, but he summons all the priests from the city of Nov. And then Shaul says, listen here, son of Achituv. Now Achimelech knows he's in trouble. And Achimelech says, whatever you say, I'm here, my master. Shaul says, why have you joined forces with David in his rebellion? Why have you joined forces with the son of Yishai in his rebellion? You gave him bread. You gave him a sword. You asked God on his behalf. Now Shaul should notice the contradiction of what he just said. If God answers David, then wait a second. So then maybe God's also part of this rebellion? You know, God did tell him he's going to lose his throne. That the implication here is very harsh. Why have you become my enemy on this day? Why have you joined an ambush against me? And Achimelech says, but who has been more faithful to you than David? And he's your son-in-law. And he does whatever you want. And he's so valued in your home. So Achimelech answers a simple answer. He says, and as a chief general in your army, whenever he asks a question of God, I service him. It's not the first time I've done that. My master, the king, don't hold it against me and my family, because I didn't know anything about this, that there's a rift between you. I didn't have the slightest indication. And Shaul says, you will die, and your family will die, because you guys knew what David was up to, and you joined forces with him. You knew he was running, and by now you should have found out. None of you came to tell me this is what's doing. And David turns to his men and says, kill him. Shaul turns to his servants and says, kill them. And the servants don't budge. And he turns to his generals. And he says to Avner and Amasa, his own relatives and generals, and says, kill the priests. And Avner and Amasa say, no. When kings were given rights in Judaism, we learn those rights from Yoshua. Yoshua was the first king here in Israel, and the people of Israel said to him, anyone who doesn't listen to you will die. So obviously we have to listen to the king. But then the people of Israel said, Rak chazak ve'ematz, provided that you are forceful in the Torah. So that means that when you're in line with the Torah, we have to obey you as king, otherwise it's punishable by the death penalty. But when you're out of line with the Torah, then we are not supposed to listen to you. And so David's own generals, they were just threatened with death. Shaul's own generals were just threatened with death when Shaul said, you're all against me. And now we see the piety of these two generals. They are overtly telling Shaul, we will not listen. Now what are they seeing before their eyes? That Shaul is ready to kill innocent Kohanim. They are going to stand up to Shaul when they see that and say no. So you could say politically they knew if they stand up to him, then their men are behind them. Not so clear. So these two brave warriors, brave tzaddikim of Israel, stand up and tell Shaul no. And then Shaul turns to Doeg. And here the Navi shifts one letter in Doeg's name. Instead of calling him Doeg, the Navi words it, writes it with a yud, Doeg, like the fisherman. And he tells Doeg, just like a fish is caught with its mouth, you're caught with your mouth. You're the one who gave the testimony that they were a part of this plot. Go kill the Kohanim. And Doeg rides around with his sword and kills the 85 Kohanim. Each of them were pious, worthy of wearing an ephod themselves. And then he goes on to the city of Nov and kills the men, women, children, oxen, donkeys, all the cattle, including the sheep, kills them all out. And a heavenly voice comes out and says, what a contradiction, Saul. When I sent you to kill out the people of Amalek, there you wanted to be more pious. You said, I can't kill innocent people. And now you have a vendetta against David. You're willing to kill Ahimelech and his family and the women and the children and the cattle. So there's a verse in Ecclesiastes. It says, Al tehi tzaddik harbe, don't be too pious. And then it says, Val tirsha harbe, and don't be too wicked. And our sages taught us here a rule. Our sages said, Mishem rachem al achzarim. If a person has compassion against those that are cruel, if a person allows himself to ignore cruelty, and he does it in the name of compassion, our sages teach, Sofo, ultimately he will, Yitachzer al rachmanim. He will find himself being cruel to those that really deserve his mercy. There is a balance. And this is a recurring theme in Judaism. The verse we say in Shabbos as well, Ohavei Hashem, those who love Hashem, sin'u ra, have to hate evil. Part of loving what's good is also to hate that which is evil. And when a person tries to ignore that and say, I'll just hug them and everything will go away, everything will be good. Let's ignore the fact that they're a threat. Let's ignore everything that's wrong here. Ultimately, he will find himself turning on those that really deserve his compassion. It doesn't happen the same day, but it happens. Coming back to the Navi, so now we find that David's nemesis has actually murdered on behalf of Shaul. Although Shaul had his errors, the one error that's going to be implicating him in heaven is this. This is the fateful error for which David will die, for which Shaul will die. This here, the murder of the innocent Kohanim. The fact that he chases David, that can be argued whether it was legitimate or not. Maybe it was the depression that was affecting him. We don't find that he's held accountable for it. But the fact that he killed these innocent people, this he's held accountable for. The Mishnah in Tractate Sanhedrin says that Doeg is one of the civilians who does not have a portion in the world to come. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, right? So Dalet in the alphabet, right? We say four civilians don't have a portion in the world to come. The Dalet is Doeg. Yes, Bini.
How does one guy kill village, 85 people?
I don't know. Maybe when he's armed and dangerous and they are priests who are not trained at war, it's not so hard. It says that King David would draw out his sword at war and wouldn't let his arm rest until he killed 800 people. That's what it says.
Also, what is an ephod?
The vest.
Ephod is an apron, and it sometimes represents people of importance or people of high spirituality used to be wearing an ephod. So over here it means these were special Kohanim. These were like the elite Kohanim. Well, how could 85 people be wearing the ephod of the Kohen Gadol? So that's why I alluded to Medrash. The way I translated it, I said there were 85 people worthy of wearing the ephod of the Kohen Gadol, because that's how our sages interpret that verse. Yes?
Isn't it something that the king, to protect the honor of the kingship and all that, can override the judicial system, put down a rebellion and whatnot? We see David does it later on, and in this particular case, you know, he was horribly wrong in killing all of the Kohanim, but David had made some serious errors in judgment going to them and telling and convincing them that there was no like disagreement between him and Saul. So like, you can sort of see how his thought process behind this, no?
He had no proof.
He had no proof.
I mean, even in the conversation, the way it's quoted, it's his feeling. And you see, he was wrong. You want to rule based on feeling? You're right. A king could. But if he's wrong...
We see David does it later, though.
Where?
So he takes the guy's evidence whenever the servant who kills Saul. Spoiler alert.
Let's wait and see. We'll discuss that
his
there.
His words as being the evidence and everything, but...
That's different.
But it's
the guy implicated himself.
Yeah.
Here he did not implicate himself. On the contrary, everything he said was innocent. In that case, you see, the person implicated himself.
Whether he meant to do it or not, though, he is someone who is, according to Saul, working in a rebellion against him.
No, Saul had no proof of that. All he knew were the facts. And the facts could be interpreted in two ways. There was nothing implicating. One of the things we're going to try to follow is how famous was this idea that David was king. At this point, it doesn't seem like anyone knows it. Shaul holds him to be in rebellion. And you see, the Navi tells you that Ahimelech did it in good faith. Everything he did was in good faith. So one of Ahimelech's sons, Eviatar, flees and he runs to David and he tells David. And David is very pained because he holds himself accountable. He says, I saw Doeg there and I knew that he would do this type of thing. And I'm responsible, I caused your family's death. Look at the difference. David takes personal responsibility. And he tells Eviatar, he says, stick with me, son, because we're running from the same man. The one who wants me dead wants you dead. So let's stick together. Politically, what just happened is that Shaul lost the backing of the Kohanim. He has no Kohanim on his side at this point. The next important thing that happened is that Shaul caused the destruction of the city of God. We came in from the desert. We camped at Gilgal. Then we shifted our camp to Shiloh. In the war where the tabernacle, where the Mishkan was conquered by the Philistines, Shiloh was destroyed. And now Nov was destroyed. So we're going to have a new center of worship of God. You had a center in Shiloh, now in Nov. Nov was just destroyed. Saul, actually, by Jewish hands, Nov was destroyed. And the next center of worship is going to be Givon. And that's the final stop before the temple. The way to remember is Magshan Gai. Magshan Gai, that's the acronym. Mem, Midbar, Gimel, Gilgal, Shin, Shiloh, Nun, Nov, Magshan, we just saw the destruction of Nov, Gai, Gimel, that's Givon, and then Yud is Yerushalayim, Jerusalem. So we're up to the final stop before Jerusalem. David gets word that the Philistines are attacking the city of Keilah. And in the city of Keilah, they are plundering the granaries. So David asks God, should I attack the Philistines? And God says, go and save the people of Keilah. So David's men tell him, look, we're here among our friends in Judean territory, and we're scared of Saul. You want us to go down, attack the Philistines in Keilah? So David asks God again, and God says, I told you go, because I'm giving you the Philistines. You're going to win. So David takes his men, he fights the Philistines, conquers them, captures their cattle, has a tremendous victory. He's rescued the people of Keilah from insurmountable odds. And Saul hears that David is in the city of Keilah. And Saul says, wow, David's going to assume because he saved the people of Keilah, he could stay by them. They have this great fortification. They have excellent towers and walls around the city. So he's going to stay in the city of Keilah. I will lay siege on the city. And with this, David's mine. God did this just for me, to give David into my hands. And so Shaul enlists. He sends out a draft, gathers a large force to go down to Keilah to lay siege on the Jewish city of Keilah to capture David. And David hears this is what's going on. He's not so worried. He asks Eviyasar the Kohen, ask God. And he says, I hear that Saul is getting ready to come down to Keilah to destroy the whole city over me. Will the people of Keilah give me into his hands? And is Saul coming after me? And God tells him, Saul is coming after you. So God answered one of two questions. Our rule is, when you ask, ask one at a time. He asked two, he got an answer for one. So then he asked the second question, will the people of Keilah turn on me? Will they give me into his hands? And God says, yeah, they will. Okay. Halachically, it's a big question whether they were right or wrong. Because if a whole city is going to die, and the king wants one man, so then maybe they should be given him over. We'll see that later on, that halachic discussion. When do we say yes? When do we say we all fight for one? These are halachot. So David takes his 600 men, and he leaves Keilah. And when Shaul hears that David's gone, so hey, lets everyone go home. David is sitting in the desert. He's in the desert of Ziph, in his own home territory with his relatives in Judean territory. And anytime David sees Shaul coming, he runs into the desert. It's easy to escape. And Yonatan comes out to David, and he comes to strengthen him and tell him, don't give up, God's with you. And I promise you, my father won't catch you. You will be king, and I will be your second in command. Our sages say there are few people in Jewish history who are exceptionally humble. One of them is Yonatan. Here he is telling David, I will be under you. They again make their pact, and Yonatan goes back home. And the people of Ziph are in danger. Because what Shaul accomplished by killing out the city of Nov is he sent out a very clear message. You side with David, you're dead. If I hear of it, you're dead. So now his own tribesmen, the tribe of Yehuda, they're scared for their life. And they're not such good people. David will sing many songs and psalms about these people. Because what they do, instead of telling David, look, you're a threat to us. If you're here, we have to tell Saul. They make believe they're nice to David. And at the same time, Shaul tells them, I'm not coming to catch him because he's so cunning, he'll always run. What you guys have to do is draw maps. Figure out all his hiding places. When you have it all worked out, come back to me. Then I'll attack and then I'll catch him. So, that's what they do. And David thinks he's in good company. and they're preparing all these maps for Shaul, explaining exactly where David could hide. And then they report to Shaul. Shaul takes 3,000 men. He comes down to the desert, and David starts running. He tries running to one hiding place. He sees Shaul's men are there. He tries going to the second. His men are there. He's cornered. He's got nowhere to run. All his plans have unraveled. He's got nowhere to go. He quickly heads out to the desert with his men and makes a fatal error. He goes over a mountain. When he goes up the mountain, he assumes Shaul will follow, but Shaul does not. Shaul sends his men to surround the mountain. David is on the top of the mountain. He looks down and he's outnumbered 5-1 with Shaul's top warriors. 3,000 against his 600. Shaul starts closing in on him. They're starting to come up the mountain. And David realizes there's no way out. If he wages war, it's Jew against Jew, and he will lose. He looks down the mountain and he says, God, you promised me I'd be king. Even Shmuel's a liar. Everyone's a liar. You can't trust anyone. Look at this. My own relatives turned on me. Shmuel promises me I'm a king. I did nothing wrong, and I'm going to die. Ani amarti vechovzi, we say it in Tehillim, in Halal, every Rosh Chodesh. David HaMelech says, Ani amarti vechovzi, I said when I was on this run, kol adam, all humanity, kozev, are liars. Kol adam, meaning even Shmuel the prophet, that everyone always thought was telling the truth, everyone's liars. He's standing at the top of the mountain, and he sees his death is imminent. And Shaul starts climbing up the mountain with his men. And this is where we'll pick up, Bezalel, next time.